The following is a continuation of the Mickey Miles podcast with Jeff Galloway. We apologize for the technical difficulties we had while recording the show, but the show must go on. The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, the official travel agency for the Mickey Miles podcast. They are the best in the travel business, and you certainly deserve the best when it comes to planning any vacation, be it Disney or otherwise. So get the best by visiting them at either mei-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or you can click on their banner on mickeymilespodcast.com.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 84 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show is Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, how's the training coming along?
It's going along very well. It's I'm very excited to get ready for the Dumbo, but this has been really cool because I've been doing strength training, and I've been able, I think this is the longest stretch, Mike, that I've gone without any sort of injury, so knock on wood. I'm hoping that it continues, but I'm having a blast, and I love the warm weather, so I'm in my sweet spot, although today was a little hot in New England, but I have a shout out, and this is going to make you laugh, Mike. This is for somebody whose name is Becky Cole, and I'm giving Becky a shout out because if our listeners, you may remember, you may have seen this on the Facebook page, Mike was in the parks on the 4th of July, and he invited anybody who found him, he was going to give out a free Mickey Miles t-shirt. So somebody did find him. It wasn't Becky, but she was looking all around for you, and she didn't get a t-shirt, but I'll give her a shout out anyway. So hopefully that's okay, Becky. Okay, the next question is from Jody Snowden. Jody Snowden would like to know your thoughts on the new Run Disney challenges, such as the Dopey, the Dumbo, and the Glass Slipper. She wants to know, what can we look forward to in these races, and what should both new and veteran runners keep in mind when training for these challenges or deciding whether or not to register for them?
If it motivates people more to have two events in a weekend, then by golly, I'm for it. And that is definitely the case because you can see how quickly these events sell out. But in addition to that, by adding the 10Ks, which Disney is doing, you're going to bring in a whole host of people that have not run half marathons before or maybe for many, many years. And now they're pulled along by those using Run, Walk, Run. They discover the endurance in a totally different and better way. And again, they're hooked on it. And they'll go on to many, many other things, not only in running, but in life.
I was wondering if you think that, are you ever worried about people signing up for too many races at once? Because, I mean, there's the allure of the bling and the allure of going to Disney. Do you worry that people overdo it sometimes?
Well, I not only worry about this, but I also hear from people who do just that. The bottom line is that if a person will follow the schedule that's on the Run Disney site and will follow the guidelines for pacing, we have almost no injuries when people follow all of the instructions. And so it's very unlikely that there are going to be problems. The races are really spread out well enough so that you have, in most cases, at least a month between. The exception, of course, is the Walt Disney World Marathon and then the Tinkerbell. So that one you have to really look at carefully and figure out whether there's going to be a problem with too many. As to the problem, though, with doing a 10K on Saturday and a half marathon on Sunday, that's been done before by a lot of people I've worked with. And as long as they're doing the prep by going out and walking gradually up to a 10K on the long run weekends, I've not seen any problems with that.
That's a good, that's a very, very good point. I have an interesting, actually two interesting questions, Jeff. I think you'll get a kick out of these from Patty Holiday. I love that name, Patty Holiday. So her first question is, she wants to know, does Jeff keep his bling? And if so, does he have a room of bling or a small house of it?
Well, Patty, I've got to tell you, I love the Disney medals, and I interact with them almost every day. And the reason that I do is my wife, Barbara, has constructed a way to display those that, as far as I know, is quite unique. It is essentially the headboard behind our bed. We have a queen-size bed, and she initially put up a curtain rod type pole, a very strong curtain rod type pole that stretched across behind the, on the wall behind the bed. And we filled all of that up. So now we have a second one that is above it. And so we have two layers of these wonderful metals. And it's a source of pride every night and every morning to look at those. And then to pick out one or two that look particularly interesting on that day, it's neat. And they're memories with every single one of them.
That's great. I think you're going to give people a lot of ideas about what to do with their medals. Do you walk around the parks with them afterwards? So you and Barbara, after a race, walk around
sometimes,
and enjoy the parks?
Yeah, sometimes. Not in every case. And the reason is that there are a number of activities that we are scheduled to do, and so it just depends on whether we do. We like to bring them around. Again, it's a source of pride, and I must admit that that the 20th anniversary medal, I think, is just one of the best medals I've seen. And I've also seen the Dumbo medal. I am incredibly impressed with that medal. I'm looking forward to winning that one too.
That's great. Looking at my 20th anniversary one now. I love it. Okay, our next question is from Jen Musselman, and she says, I know that Jeff says to run a ratio that feels good to you, but does he have any advice about how to up your ratio? For example, if you're running 30-30, how do you increase to a 1-1? Do you train in a way that can increase your run time, or you just tough it out until your conditioning improves and you sustain a new ratio? I'm sure a lot of people have this question.
A lot of people do, and a lot of folks assume that by increasing the amount of running and decreasing the walking that they will run faster, and this is usually not the case. As we spoke in the last show, most folks that have tried various strategies usually find that the shorter increments work better. For example, let's say that someone is training for a 12 to 13 minute goal in the race, whatever the race is. The normal ratio for 12 minutes per mile is a 2-in-1 ratio, and the ratio for a 13 minute is 1-in-1. Now, here's what I recommend to test it out, to see what feels right, and then to be able to shift if you feel like it on race day. On every Tuesday, I recommend doing a short 5-minute easy warm-up jog, and then do some of my drills. The cadence drill is the primary one, and it only takes a few minutes to help you run more efficiently. You'll see that in all of my books. And then after doing the cadence drill, you go right into a series of half-mile measured segments in which you run at the pace that you want to run in the race itself, and you try a different strategy on each half-mile segment. For example, most of my e-coach clients do this on a Tuesday, and they will have a series of 4 to 6 half-mile segments. example is one that I worked on recently with one of my clients, and that is to have a 10-minute pace in the half marathon. So I'm recommending a 5-minute half mile pace in which they try a 3-in-1 ratio to run 3 minutes and walk one on the first one, take a 2 to 3 minute walk in between the half, first half and second half, and then on the second one to try the same ratio of 3-in-1, but to run 90 seconds and walk 30. And on the third one, to do 60 seconds of running and 20 seconds of walking. But to prepare for longer segments, on the fourth one, I'm recommending going up to 80 seconds running and 20 seconds of walking. So there's a 4-in-1 ratio. And then on the next one, for that client, I was recommending a 2-minute run and a 30-second walk, which again is it's a 4-in-1 ratio. So it allows them a chance to test the longer ratios and see what works best. Unfortunately, those who go from a 1-in-1 ratio up to a 2-in-1 and 3-in-1 often experience great fatigue at the end of long runs. So let's test it out first on some of the short half-mile segments on Tuesday, and then you can see how it works.
I think that's a great idea, Jeff. It's like slow and steady. Don't take leaps. Take small steps, and hopefully it will lead to success rather than risking. And also, you could be risking. Let me ask: would taking those larger leaps, would that possibly lead to an injury too, as well as the fatigue?
Yes, the fatigue usually comes first, and people notice that they stepped over the line because it takes them more days than normal to feel good on their runs after doing that. But I can tell you that the trend is really in the opposite direction. When folks running a 2-in-1 or 3-in-1 at a 10-minute per mile pace, a lot of those are shifting down to 1-in-1 or 30 seconds and 30 seconds or even 20 seconds and 20 seconds, and they're running 10 minutes per mile that way.
Yeah, it makes sense. We have a question from I love this question from Joseph Kalinski, and Joe says, I've had the honor of meeting Jeff twice at expos. He took the time to answer questions and was fantastic. So thanks, Jeff. But I'd like to ask Jeff if he could provide any recommendations for preparing yourself mentally for the challenge of a marathon. I tend to struggle with my focus as I hit the wall like a bug on a windshield. Any tricks Jeff could offer to help maintain my focus late in the race would be well appreciated.
Well, Joe, it's good to hear from you. I always enjoy spending time with folks and answering the questions that I can. It's just wonderful weekends. To answer your question, the concept of hitting the wall is both mental and physical, and it has some to do with nutrition, too. To avoid hitting the wall, the best strategy physically is to have more frequent walk breaks early on than you are currently doing. For example, if you're hitting the wall using a 3-minute run, 1-minute walk, then I would start out with 1-in-1 for the first 6 miles and then shift to 2-in-1 if you're feeling good. And then at 20 or so miles, you shift up to 3-in-1. But the principle that I gave in this example would apply depending on whatever ratios you're using now. And in my book, Galloway Training Programs, you'll find what the appropriate ratio would be by the pace per mile, and it will really allow you to make your strategic choices. And then strategic choices are what it's about to maintain control over your mental side, whether it be at the end, the beginning, or the time period leading up to the start of the race and the first part of the race. My book, Mental Training, has several extremely successful strategies for mental training. And what it involves, the first strategy is mental rehearsal. So, Joe, if you've had troubles hitting the wall, you probably have had anxieties leading up to the point where you tend to hit the wall. This has governed the anxieties, and the negative thoughts are usually centered out of the subconscious brain. And when we run over a period of time for long distances, we allow the subconscious brain to conduct our running and other activities. The problem is it also monitors stress. And if it is in control of your activities, which you default to it in a lot of cases in running, then that subconscious brain, as the stress lead builds up to borderline level, the subconscious will trigger the release of anxiety hormones, which trigger anxiety thoughts. And then if you allow the subconscious to stay in control and the stress builds up higher, which it will in a marathon, then the subconscious will trigger the release of negative hormones and negative thoughts as a result of that. You don't have to do away with the stress to do away with the negative hormones. You simply have to have a strategy which then shifts you into the frontal lobe. That's the conscious brain. It overrides the subconscious brain. It allows you to gain control over the moment and then proceed step by step to a positive mindset and then to a positive result in your race. The techniques that I mention in mental training are to prepare yourself for it in advance by having a cognitive strategy that deals with the reality that you're going through, then to set up a series of small steps cognitively that you do mentally in advance. And then as you go forward step by step, you stay in the frontal lobe so that you're cognitive the whole way. And that way, the subconscious cannot do its negative to you.
So Jeff, it sounds like just as we are training to improve upon our physical stamina and our physical preparedness for these long distance races, we should also be looking at preparing ourselves mentally to handle the hours that will be out there and the miles that will be out there, because the two pretty much work together, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the lead is taken by the brain as the race goes on. And it's very common for people to experience the psychological letdown at the end of a race because of stress. What I'm saying in the mental training book is that we have a great deal of control over that. And we take control by having cognitive strategies, positive mantras that we say over and over again to keep us in the frontal lobe. And that frontal lobe will then disconnect the buildup of stress that would be generated by the subconscious brain, leaving you in control of your attitude. There are three main mental training techniques, as you mentioned, Mike, and the first one is mental rehearsal to prepare you for specific situations that have come on. The second one is called magic words, which are tied in with past successes that where you started to lose it but got it back together and were strong to the finish, and you associate those with key words that then bring back the positive feelings when you say those words over and over again. And then the final one is what I call dirty tricks that you play on the subconscious brain to keep you cognitive during the latter stages of a tough day.
So, Jeff, is that one of the reasons that you have people doing a few training runs at the end of their training that equal the length of, or maybe surpass the length of the race that they're doing to maybe alleviate anxiety?
That is a great example of how the mind and the body can be trained at the same time. Because during these really long runs, I found that there are two primary needs in pushing past whatever a wall would be. The first one is physical. And if you have not trained yourself to go the distance of a race, then guess where you're going to hit the wall? It's going to be very close to the distance of your longest run. And I hear this over and over again, hundreds of times a week from people. The fix is very simple. You build up your long training run so that 3 weeks before you run the distance of your event, or you follow the Run Disney schedules that I designed for the half marathon that have those long runs culminate 2 weeks before the half marathon. But as you're building up the physical endurance, you're also generating psychological tools to deal with the adversity. And once you reach the last week before a half marathon or a marathon, it's very common for the subconscious brain to be feeling the anticipated stress of the race that's coming up. And when it does that and the stress level builds up, it will trigger anxiety hormones and negative attitude hormones. And the simple fix there, when you've done the training that we have on the Run Disney site, is you can just talk back to that subconscious brain and say, "You're not going to bother me by anxiety over going the distance because I have gone the distance. I just did it 2 or 3 weeks ago."
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I saw that. That must be the reason, because if you know that you've already done it, then that, you know, that factor's taken out of the equation. You can do it.
And it's a cognitive thought, too, which shifts control into the conscious brain, which gets you out of the garbage that can come out of the subconscious.
That's great. Well, it's clear that we could have another show just on this, and I know you have at least 2 copies of that book sold after this podcast, because Mike and I have both written it down. Okay, I want to get to some more of the questions. We have quite a few more, but we don't want to keep you for the whole month of July here. So Kimberly Markey wants to know, this is a really interesting question, and I know a few people are doing this. If you're planning on running the Dopey, and then the Tinkerbell 5K, 10K, and half marathon on the following week, how many days rest should you have between? And when should you do a shakeout run? I was thinking rest for Monday and Tuesday, then do two short, maximum 3 mile runs on Wednesday and Thursday. What do you think?
Well, it will vary somewhat with individuals. And when you have run that much on one weekend, there is a tendency to not want to do anything, which is not the best plan, because you're not going to work out as much of the sore places as you would if every other day you got out for at least a walk of 3 to 4 miles. But even better would be to do a run walk in which you would walk for most of it, say 45 to 50 seconds of walking, followed by 10 to 15 seconds of running, very easy running. And we're only talking about 20 to 30 minutes every other day. That's all. But if you do that, you're going to work the blood through the system, the running muscles, better. That means that they're going to restore themselves more quickly. And you'll also find that adaptations in your feet and legs and so forth come around, as opposed to not doing anything. Those who lay off completely between Dopey weekend and Tinkerbell are going to have their muscles feel like they're creaking and groaning and whatever when they start the races on Tinkerbell weekend.
That's all we have time for these questions. But Jeff, we would love to be able to do another show to finish off these questions, if you would be so kind as to give us your expertise.
Love to.
The Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They are the official vacation planners for the Mickey Mouse Podcast. We want you to visit them so that you can see how they will go that extra mile to make sure you get the most for your vacation dollar. You can visit them now by going to www.mei-travel.com or www.mousefantravel.com. And, of course, you can always get to them by clicking on their banner on the Mickey Miles Podcast website.
Okay, so for Jeff Galloway and for Michelle Scrivener-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we will see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.